हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तुमा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Okay, so then Satkriya Sar, Vivaha Karma, the overview. So you have Gyatri Karma, these are rites performed by the relatives. Then Sampradanam, giving away the bride, means by the father of the girl. Gomokshana, releasing the cow. Achidra Vachana, words to absolve oneself of faults. Kushandika, preliminary rites for the yajna, means all the technical things when you're installing the fire. Panigrahanam, taking the bride's hands. Vastra, paridapana, putting on new cloth. Sindurdhana, decorating the bride with kumkuma. Ajahoma, the groom's oblations for the bride's welfare. Lajahoma and Asmakrama, Kramana, mounting the stone. Saptapati Gamana, taking 7 steps. Panigrahanam, taking the bride's hands. Uttara Vivaha, subsequent rites. Dhruva Darshanam, viewing the pole star. Bhojanam, honoring Prasadam. Yanarohana, mounting the vehicle for traveling. Driti Homa, entering the house. Chaturthi Homa, removing obstacles. And Udichya Karma, concluding activities. Okay, so then starting with Gyati Karma. So Gyati Karma, the rites performed by relatives. Then on the morning of the wedding, the bride and groom should be ceremoniously bathed by relatives and friends with scented water at their homes. The body of the bride should be rubbed with powdered mung, urad, masur, and barley for purification. Right, so here's masur is used here. We don't eat masur dal, but here it's used in this thing because it's also because it's red, it's considered it has that element of passion. So the mung and the urad are then the very pure elements. The barley and masur has that touch of passion in it. Like that. So that means the groom is being bathed, but now we see here is that this is then describing then the bride's side. The name of the so now she's rubbed with mung, urad, masur, and barley for purification. Then the name of the groom should be written on a leaf and thrown in a pot of water. A small portion of this water should be poured over the bride's head.
Maharaj,
Yes.
I think they make a mix of these three dals. They make a powder together too.
Yeah,
There is a standard powder with a mix of these three, no, in general.
you have powdered mung, powdered urad, powdered masur, and powdered barley. Okay. So you're using one part of each. So there must be, standard things here.
Yeah. I remember in childhood that it's given for children also.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, for bathing and all that, you'd use generally masur is not necessarily part of it, but it could be. And then they may put in also neem leaves and other herbs and everything. But yes, you do get, especially in South, they still use these things as regular bathing. So you can buy the already powdered stuff and then you take it, mix it with the water and make the paste and then you use it. So yes, no, it's a standard thing. But here then it's specifically mentioning mung, urad, masur, and barley. So the other things would be left out.
Okay, Mark.
Because this isn't the early morning bath. This is the ceremonious bath. So that means the early morning bath, got up, brushed the teeth, all those kind of things are all done. Then there's going to be a time, you find a nice time for that, and then these things are done. So these are done before. It's not that has to be on the day of the wedding, just like the bath with the groom. I'm not sure if this will be separate. From then, this is the main thing. The gyati is there, but you see also then they do the thing with the turmeric. you know, doing that, that's also an auspicious thing. So whether that's that is replace this one, or, you know, or if that's a separate one. But Gopal Bhatta Goswami starting with the Gyati Karma here. And that. Okay, so then a small portion of this, then the pot of water that has a leaf with the name of the groom written on it, a small portion of water should pour it over the bride's head with the mantra that says, O Lord, you are known as Vishnu, the all-pervading. Bring, name of the groom, together with the bride. So bring the groom together with the bride. She has been obedient to you, and within her body is the supreme fire of creation, made powerful by her austerities, right? So this would be the element of probably the addition of the Masoor doll, is that then you're purifying the, you know, the subtle aspects, and you're purifying this aspect of the Rajagun that is the, you know, has the element of the potency of creation. Right. So then Vishnu, so this is the prayer to Vishnu, that Vishnu is bringing them together. And because she has been serving the Lord like that, then the Lord's potency of creation is also there, which is made powerful by her austerity. So when the girl is austere, you know, austere in the way of being chaste, to performing her duties, you know, all those elements in the mode of goodness, then this creates that power, like that. A small portion of water should be poured below her navel with the mantra, I wash her below the navel with honey. This is the second face of Prajapati. By that, you conquer all uncontrollable men. You are the ruler, the controller, right? So the face, you know, so the face means the upper half of the body above the navel. That's going to be the first face of Prajapati, right? Prajapati is the lord of procreation. So that is what's above. And so that's going to be the first attractive feature, the personality, all these different things like that, all the different, you know, feminine natures, all those, what do you call those, feminine graces, I think you call them, like that. And then below the navel, then that'll be then with the desire for having progeny, that's going to be then the other half. Right? Like that. So that's the second face of Prajapati. One should then pour a little water on her head and the rest over the other parts of her body with the mantra. So then having poured a little bit on the top, a little bit below the waist, and then on the, again on the head, and then over the rest of the body. Then that one we're chanting. The devotees continuously see the supreme abode of Vishnu, which, like the sun in the sky, spreads its brilliance throughout the whole universe. Right? So again, you see is all these mantras are all in connection with the Lord and the sages and then seeing the Lord. So that means we continue to see the Lord. So whatever one's doing, one's always seeing the Lord involved in this. It's not that there's this idea that there's, okay, there's the spiritual stuff and then there's the material. No, for the devotees, there's the paravidya and the apara. And the apara is what's engaged in the Lord's service. So therefore, all the religious activities are seen in the context of pleasing the Lord and in pursuance of pleasing the Lord. So that's how things work. So you see is as you go through here, it means we go through, you'll see all the various rituals and mantras that are used. It's all in connection with the Lord and how you're going to see things connected with the Lord.
Krishna.
So this idea that it's you know, just, okay, you know, that we're doing the spiritual and all that. Now we're down to the practical stuff. It's that it's not practical if it's not in connection with Krishna. Since why things practically work is because they function according to the laws of nature. You follow the laws of nature, only they'll work. But now if you see it, follow the laws of nature in the context it's Krishna's laws, and therefore to please him you're following his laws, then it starts to take on that devotional aspect. Otherwise it's pious, you're being elevated, you're being purified, because you're acknowledging either the element of Brahman, you know, how the all-pervading aspect of how the potencies are everything, or the aspect of his being God and how he's all-pervading, controlling everything, like that, but we're trying to bring it as devotees to the point that Krishna is a person. This is how he likes things done. It means if Krishna gets married, then he follows this. This is how he likes it done. So we do it in that context. Yes, good. Okay, so then next is sampradanam, giving the bride away. When the auspicious hour arrives, the ceremony should start with the reception of the groom. A cow should be tied in the north side of the room. Right? So generally this would be, you know, that courtyard area or these kinds of things, then it's easy enough to bring in a cow. Right? Otherwise, if you're on the, you know, 23rd floor of a high-rise building, hard to get the cow in, unless you're getting one of those like puri cows or that, you know, that they're only about this big and about this tall, then maybe you could get one in. But yeah. The father, that's why generally you see people go back to their ancestral home for all these things, because they actually, at least in the past, used to have courtyards. Yeah. The father of the bride should sit facing north and perform achman. When the groom enters the room, the father should recite Mangalacharna, page 62, right? Those ones that we did before, and Swastivachanam, page 346. Then the father says to the groom, right? So he sits and does achman, and then the groom enters the room. Then he does the Mangalacharna, that everything should be auspicious for this whole occasion. So we see is that the father is the one that is the one putting on the wedding ceremony. So therefore, he is overseeing that everything is going to be nice and arranged. And then here he starts off with, you know, the achman and then Mangalacharan and Swastivachan, that everything should be auspicious, right? Then the father says to the groom after that, "Welcome, be comfortable." The groom replies, "I have been well received." The father says, "I shall now worship you." The groom replies, "Please perform the worship." The father should worship him by offering chandan, garlands, rings, upavita, and upper and lower cloths, saying, "Etani gandha." Here I am presenting to you this fragrant chandan, flowers, and new cloth with humble obeisances. Right? So he gives them all these different things, and then, you know, the plate, and he says this. The groom should accept the items, saying, "May auspiciousness reign." The father should fold his hands and say, "Today, at this time, having honored you with chandan and pushpa, I select you as the suitable husband to whom I shall give my daughter." The groom replies, "I accept." Right? So the idea is that he creates the auspicious thing. He respects the groom, because now the groom is going to be taking up the duties that the father has been doing all this time. And so naturally it's like handing off the torch. And that means his relationship continues, but the responsibility is now the husband's. Right? Before that, the responsibility is his. Like that. But now he's gone to her house, so the responsibility is there. He's always there to give backup. He's not the direct one. The bride, covered up, should be escorted around the standing groom seven times by her women friends, right? So the bride, then she's wearing what she wears, and she also has an extra cloth that covers her face. It's a thin cloth, you know, or some kind of lace, so she can see where she's going, but others can't exactly see, right? The bride should then be uncovered, and the bride and groom should see each other and exchange garlands. So the idea is the first one to see will be the groom, right? You know, so then, you know, like that, some make a big thing out of this and all that, different communities. But the basic thing is then there, then they say, then, you know, they're standing, he can take off because he's the closest. So to take the cloth off, that means he has to be standing close, and then they're facing each other like that. And then after that, then they exchange garlands, right? So then they'll both take off their garlands, hold them, right? And so then the girl will then offer the garland first, because now the father of the girl has accepted him as the groom. And now the girl, by offering the garland, then she accepts him also as the groom, right? Then he's reciprocating that by putting his garland on her, you know? And so in all these things, they're all fairly straightforward. You don't have to make any technical points out of them. Different communities in India have made, as we go through, have made particular elements of the vivaha into more of a, how you say, more of a show, or to put more emphasis on it, or, you know, whatever, according to the local nature of the people and that, and what they thought was very nice or what they valued and all that. So on the makes, like I said, it's a simple thing. She goes around seven times around with the friends, then they come, and then he takes off. Or the maid servants can, it says, the bride should then be uncovered. It can also be that the assistants to her can also take it off, because they're going to be, in other words, they should be involved, because we always have to remember is that the girl on this day means girls in general are always clued into what's going on around them and always very aware of that. And then on this day, they're even more aware, because now means in other occasions, the girl is always generally having a tendency to make herself the center of attention, unless he sees that that's not going well. And then she'll, you know, not do that. But here, this is her day, as it said. So therefore, everything's in there. And so everything should be perfect. So the girls that are assisting, because they're also aware, they know where pins are or where this is or where that is. So they're not just going to yank it off, right? They're going to take it off in such a way that doesn't ruin what all the arrangements are there. So that's either they can pull it back, means in other words, there's pulling it back from her face and then taking it off her head and back so it's disconnected from the body. So therefore, then, in that, it depends if the guy, and as we were saying, and then the guy, in general, aren't so aware of external surroundings unless they're engaged in some very specific mechanical duty, and then they're going to be looking at the mechanics of it. But in here, it's not that they're including personality when they use mechanics. So here, because you're dealing with a girl, and she's in a naturally very aware state, then everything has to be very proper. So if he is such and it's there, or it's the community's tradition, then he can bring it up from the front over the head, but not take it off like that. Let the assistants take it off after that. He'll reveal the face, like, see, like that. Then the others can take it off. Or if it's a thing where it's not, then they can just reveal the face and take it off. But my point is if you have these assistants, let them do it. But otherwise, if there's no one else there, there's the priest, there's the bride and groom, maybe there's a, you know, a father there or some senior devotee, and maybe there's another lady there like that, or a couple of ladies, you know, four or five at the wedding, and that's it. Then it may be he's doing if no one else is there to help. But generally, it's always good if some of the ladies help take it off. Pass, because the revealing the face, that doesn't get in the way of anything. But from the face back, you have all the hairpins, this, that, and other things, then it's better some of the ladies help, as long as they're there. But if nobody's there, then hey, then, you know, guy should do the best he can. So that's the point, is that the guy is, you know, on cloud nine, and he's completely generally unaware of everything. So you'll see is that in these things, keep it very simple, and don't necessarily get him doing, you have to explain everything before, so he is going to, at least there's a chance of him being aware of what's going on. Right? Does that make sense? So in the principle of that, you know, about the opposites there, that there's a certain amount of, the girl is a certain amount of aware, the boy is a certain amount aware, she may be 80%, he may be 20%, but on this day, it's even more, so naturally, you know, just the way the modes work, he'll be even less. Does that make sense? Yeah. Then, the father should say, the worshipable cow has appeared here, accompanied by a calf. Let her be abundant in milk and supply us for many years. right? So then the cow is here, and then he's pointing out how there will be all this abundance of milk and supplies for many years. You know, in other words, there's going to be an abundance, there's going to be prosperity, and may that continue. Because we have to always remember is that real wealth starts with the cows, you know, because the cows, the milk, these are things you can use. Nuts and bolts, other things like that, you can't eat, you can't wear. So this is something that actually has a direct effect. So the milk that's offered to the Lord, the ghee, it's offered in sacrifice. So everything starts with the worshipable cow. The groom should sit on an asan facing east, saying, I preside over this far-reaching step for sustenance, right? So getting married is a far-reaching step. It's something that takes you across basically the major portion of your life, the second quarter of your life. And at the same time, as if there's also vanaprastha, so that can take you again across the next quarter. So half of your life can be given for, you know, in this grihastha and vanaprastha aspect. So this is the far-reaching step, right? So he presides over that, means he's taking responsibility. He knows this. He's doing this. It's his thing. He can't go, oh, I'm the victim. I didn't want this, like that. That we don't need that at this point. Just as she becomes more feminine, he should be more masculine. Therefore, he presides over this far-reaching step for sustenance. In other words, by doing all these things, religious things properly, and all that from religion, from Dharma, comes artha. So you want facilities, you want sustenance, you want that, you perform your duties nicely. You don't want that, hey, do whatever you want, and, you know, then find out how things go. Ever notice that you have all these guys come up and they have some good karma and then they become very famous in that, let's say a singer, actor, and this and that, and then after a short time, you never hear of them or they're gone? Yeah, you check it out. It's just they don't know how to behave. And so therefore, it's just gone. There's no Dharma. The father, taking 25 blades of kusa, the tips having been tied in a figure eight knot with a few of the blades of grass wound 2.5 times in the counterclockwise direction around the other blades of grass and tied near the roots, right? So in other words, you have the kusa grass. So that'll be, you know, quite long. So you're going to take that and the very top, you know, so either it's very fresh, so it can do, or it's soaked in water a bit. Then it's taken a figure eight. Figure eight's like the regular knot. With a regular knot, you come over and then go through. This is, you go over and then go around and come in the back, right? A regular overhand, you go that and come go in the front, the Brahma Granti, or the figure eight. Then it goes over, and then you go around and come in the back. So then you'll see it's in a figure eight. And then you pull, and so then the grasses will be coming, then there'll be the figure eight, and then it'll continue again. And then at the bottom, you're taking a few blades, and then tying around, you know, the flexible part, and tying that around the bottom in a counterclockwise way. So in other words, you're holding it this way, so you're going around counterclockwise, it's going off. So you count counterclockwise, and then you're tying it. So that way it stays together as a nice purcha. Another way to do it, it means that by the looks of it here, that is that you don't have to take separate, is that after tying the knot, a few of the blades that are there, you're going to wrap them around the thing to hold it, and then you're going to run them over and then through to hold it. Okay, now with the tips facing north, should offer them to the groom on the outstretched palms of his hand while saying. So that would mean the groom is sitting on the asan facing east. So that means if your yajna is there, you take it that the direction that the yajna is facing. In other words, when the person doing the yajna is sitting down, which way he's looking across the kunda, you take that as east, right? Doesn't matter which direction it is. If you can match that up with the actual direction of east, that's nice. But here, all these definitions are given in connection to how it relates to the yajna kund and the face, the direction it's facing. So therefore, he'll sit down, you know, facing east. So in other words, you can set up seats along with the you know, next to where the Hotri would sit and then there do his Achman and that, and then the father would then come and be facing him, and so he would have the kusa, the whole long thing, in his both hands, with the tips on his right. So that means if he's facing the groom, who's facing east, the father is facing west, so that means the north is to his right. Right? So in other words, the tips are on the auspicious side, on the right hand. And then he says, and then with outstretched palms, he says, please receive this kusa grass. The groom should reply, I receive it. Right? So then he's receiving it. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. Yes, now you could say, oh, but he's receiving it the other way, but this is part of the wedding. So what's on the left? Right? That's going to be the wife. The great herb, the queen of Soma, being plentiful, faultless, and 100 times wise, bestow blessings on me as I sit upon you for an asan. Right? So he's sitting upon kus grass, and he's also receiving this and offering prayers to the queen of Soma. So in other words, Soma is the moon, and he's in charge of all the herbs and, you know, trees and all the vegetation that there is, and also water, right? And so then he being that, then the queen is going to be the kusa grass. So of all the varieties of things that are growing, the kusa is considered, you know, the most, you know, auspicious and that, in this formal sense and all that. And so then she is the queen of Soma, queen of the moon. Okay, being plentiful, faultless, right? So that there's enough, you know, there's so much, there's no faults, and 100 times wise, right? So then going to be that aspect of that depth of it there. Bestow blessings upon me as I sit upon you for an asan. Because so the asan also is representing the earth. Right, so that means then all aspects of it. So this, it, you know, being Punya Bhumi, it's a place for performing auspicious activities. All that, we're always supported by the earth, and so then, yeah. He should place the tips pointing north and sit on it. Right, so he's received it like this. Then he'll move back, turn it the other way, put it down, and then sit again. The father should offer kusa grass again. Please receive this kusa grass. The groom says, I receive it. Then says again, the same verb, same verse. Great herb, queen of Soma, growing wherever there is earth. Faultless, please bestow blessings on me at my two feet. He should place the kusa beneath his feet with tips facing north, right? So then again, now he puts it down there and then sits. He's already sitting on an asan, right? Yes, he's already sitting on. So that means you already have your kusasana. Now he's putting in the middle where he'll sit, and then he's putting now, you know, where his feet are, you know, at the front of the asana. The father should offer water to his feet. These are the waters for your feet. Please accept them. The groom should reply, I accept them. May prosperity come to me, O water, from looking at you. Right? So then through that means by looking at you, means by looking at water, because also one, you're going to see water. Water is auspicious, you know, it's the potency of the Lord, but also it's that when you, before you drink water, drink any, when you're dealing with liquid, you always look. Right, you don't just pick something up and drink. You don't know what's in there. It could be a crocodile or anything, you know, it could be, you know, like that. So you always look, and by that glance, it's purified. As long as there's nothing impure in there. But if it, the water stays clean, you look, it purifies, because anything inauspicious that can be there can't remain when you glance. Then you drink your water. So in this case, by looking at, from looking at you, means I will not always, you know, purifying. I'm always acting in a way that my life is pure. And when I'm dealing with water, which will be also then the relationship, means the aspect of the rasa, the taste that's there in the relationship, one's always glancing to see that it is pure. Right? That makes sense. So as you'll also see here is that these things that he's doing again that are going through, these are parts of the Grihastha's life, how he functions in his life. You know, and you can see is the level that we're dealing with here is that the members of the Vedic society, they had the consciousness that one, they could say all these things because it's all being said in Sanskrit, because they probably knew Sanskrit. And two is that these are the things that they're using in their life. These are the natural things that they've been trained in the Gurukul, how to see things, how to deal. Now they're applying those principles into Grihastha life. Because otherwise, before that, the brahmachari is learning, you know, the asana, how he sits, he respects the earth when he does the puja and everything like that. Then, you know, he has the water, he's purified by the water, you know, he's glancing at the water. And so all these different things are being done, you know, and then also his feet have been washed by the teacher when he graduates, like that. And so then, you know, this is so that his walking, his movement will be pure. So then if the feet are pure, then the movement is pure, the place is pure. So all these things, his action is pure, his consciousness, he sees, you know, he sees that things are done right, like that. So, yeah. The groom should receive the water from the father, place it on the earth, gaze at it, then pour water in his left foot, then right foot, then both feet with the following mantras. Right, so this can be done with an Achman cup, you know, so he's going to place it on the ground, you know, in front of him, and then he's going to gaze, look at it, because you're supposed to, then he's going to take there, and then, what do you say, place on his left foot, you know, because the left foot's on the right side, you know, you just have to sprinkle a little bit on your toe, you don't have to sit there and wash the whole foot, you know, it's like when you're doing Achman. Then, you know, there's padipadi in the head. It's not that you're doing a full foot wash there or a full bath. It's a little bit in the thing. You're sprinkling a drop on each foot, a drop on the head. Yeah. It's not a bath. Like that. You should have already had your feet washed before you came here. This is a subtle purification, but it has that potency there. Yeah. So he does the left foot, then the right foot, and then he does both feet. And then, you know, so in other words, one drop, and then with one drop, he does both. Right? That's where it's all in the wrist, right? Yeah. That's how the Achman works. It's all in the wrist. Okay. Then he says the following, I wash the left foot and bestow wealth in this domain when he does that side. Like that. I wash the right foot and take possession of wealth in this domain. Right, so the left foot, he bestows wealth. The right foot, he takes possession of wealth. So the left foot is the left side. What is that representing in his body as a Grihastha? The wife. So, do we get the idea? I bestow wealth in this domain. I take possession of wealth. In other words, in his world, he takes possession of wealth and gets it. And within her world, he bestows it. These are eternal principles. It's just the way it goes. Like that. You may like it, you may not like it. You may say this and that, or we're all equal. It doesn't matter. This is the reality. If you don't like this, then there is, you know, that we will see coming up and all that. When we get to it, that there's the brahmachari, you know, does the upanayanam. Then, before doing this ceremony, he has to do the graduation ceremony. So if you don't like this point or any of the other points coming up, then it's a very simple thing. Don't graduate. And if you don't graduate, then you're not obliged to do all these things. Yeah. Okay. Then he says, I wash one foot, then the other. By prosperity of this domain, may I attain fearlessness. Right. So then the domain of them both, he has what's going for the wife, what he's gaining, and then seeing it together. His world, her world, it's together. Right. And may I attain fearlessness means then fearlessness means you have to be giving up the mundane identity. There's fearlessness only comes from not identifying on that lower level by identifying on a higher level. So of course, you know, you can always take it at something. It means you always see like the mouse in the corner, you back him into the corner, then he becomes fearless because he as far as he sees, is going to die anyway. So that's the Anamoy platform. Pranamoy, yes, you know, liberty, fraternity, equity, then you can go out and die for that if you want. Yeah, or you can die for religion, you know, like that, you know, like that, like at the Masada or something like that. You know, or then, you know, you have the thing is that, you know, it's for the element of spiritual life. You give up the attachment to Dharma, Artha, Kama, or you give up attachment to Dharma, Artha, Karma and moksha and only, you know, how to please Krishna. So at any level, then you, one attains fearlessness. But you see here by what's being pointed out, this must mean that at minimum you're talking the religious, but ideally, then you're talking on the transcendental. So at least then within the spiritual, then you're engaging the religious in the service of that secondary elements, the service to the primary of serving Krishna in devotion. Does that make sense? Then you attain fearlessness. Like that. So you can only be fearless if you're identifying basically for devotees as a devotee of Krishna and nothing else. How are we doing on time? Okay. The father should take durva, white rice, etc., in a conch and offer argya. All right, so all the elements that go into argya. And then he says, this is the argya, please accept it. All right, so then he offers the argya. Argya is offered above the head. And then you sprinkle, you pour a little bit on the palms. And then the person who meets the father is offering to the groom, right? So he's showing, then the father will pour just a few drops into the hand palms of the groom. The groom will take that and sprinkle it on his head, right? So this is where we get the point is that you see, that's why in the Arctic, we just show it above the head. And then we're pouring some out, right? You know, after the, because argya is poured and then they sprinkle it on their head. That's the point of pouring it out. You know, it's not that, oh, we're getting rid of that, you know, bad and dirty stuff because we offered it to that person. No. So it's Krishna. Going up is no. But when you offer to Krishna, there's some pours, you offer to Radha, some pour like that. And so then, like that. And then the remnants are given to everybody else. So then, that aspect. So that's why some people think it's a hand wash, but it's not. You've done the hand wash, everything with the Achman. You've purified the hands. You've done all the things. This is for sprinkling on the head. This is, it's a prokshana that you're doing it and then you sprinkle it on your own head. So that's the idea is that you're offering, you see in the conscious always above, you're pouring some out because that's the, for the hands, but it's not a hand wash. So some will think padyam argyam achmaniyam as the argya is hand wash. So you're washing hands, mouth, and feet. No, it's that the Achman does all that. This is your sprinkling on the head. Like that. So the groom should say, I am accepting it. And then says, you are the ruler of food. May I become your master. Right? So then, yeah. So there's some aspect here, the ruler of food then is that you have the aspect of that it will, food then is, you know, digested, that it goes nicely. So if you're going to become the master of ruler of food, that you know, your digestion of it, because if that works, then it's there. So that purity, by having that proper purity and that religious standing, then everything else follows. So from Dharma will come Artha. From digestion comes health. Does that make sense? Yeah. The father should offer Achman. I am offering you water for sipping. The groom should reply, I am accepting this water. And then he says, you are fame, give fame to me. Right? So then water is that, the rasa and all that, the purificatory rites. the position of purification, like that. So then all these things are, you know, where the glory comes. You know, being famous for, you know, being, you know, a nasty person or this, that's not what we're looking for, because then you may be famous this life, and then next life, you know, you won't have a position and you won't be famous. Like that. He should sip the water facing north. So he's facing east. So then to do that, he'll turn and face north and do Achman. The father should take a pot of Madhuparka and offer. So he'll turn back to that direction. Please accept this Madhuparka, the father says. Groom should take the Madhuparka and place the container on the earth, saying, I am accepting it. And then said, you are fame incarnate. Yeah, so that means the incarnation of fame. So we see is that regular Achman is fame. And then this is the Madhuparka, which is also known, Prabhupada explains as Madhuparka Achman. This is another one of those issue-based points where those fools that have picked up things from here and there, and especially from the Shris, don't know how to interpret it or understand it. Then when Prabhupada says Madhuparka Achman, then they make a big stink that it's not an Achman. If you're drinking it, it's an Achman. And after, you'll perform Achman again, Puna Achman. And they go together. So you can do the main Achman just comes because it's part of the receiving and all that and the mantras. But you see with the Madhuparka, it goes with Achman. So the two go together. Like if I say knife and sheath, or fork and spoon, or knife and fork, you know, or bowl and spoon, you can't say that that's wrong. You have to be uneducated, uninformed to think it's wrong. So it's very important to understand here that it goes together and how it's accepted, because he doesn't know. He just says that you drink it. You know, it's like what he used to do in his zone when he'd do it, and they're doing some big thing for the zonal acharya there. They would make like a, let's say a strawberry smoothie or something like that, an offer, and he gets to drink that. It's like, but that's a naivedya, you know, or that's a meal. This is not a meal. This is for purification, right? You become famous by purification. You're pure. That's why you're famous. Not because you ate, you're famous. Right? You're honoring prasad. Of course, that's glorious. But you have to understand what's going on, the subtleties that are happening here. So, you are fame incarnate. You should drink three times, saying, you are the food of fame, the food of greatness. You are the food of virtues. Give me all virtues. Right? Because then, it's purifying. So, in other words, Achman is purifying, Madhuparka is purifying. So this Madhuparka, how it's done in tradition is I think it's the middle finger. The ring and middle finger are put together, right? Right? Then you have the Madhuparka, you just slightly touch it. And then you're going to take one drop, throw forward to the east, one towards the west, one towards the north, one towards the south. Right? Then you're going to take a drop and flip it into your mouth. That's the Achman part. That's Achman. You're just sipping a little water. That would be the idea of, you know, drinking water three times, you know, taking it and sipping it and taking it like this. Then that's Achman? No. It's purifying the mouth. So therefore that's sip. And it purifies the whole, you know, body, the consciousness. So that's done. So you do that three times. So you'll do the four directions and one in your mouth. And then he should do three times. Then he does one silently without mantra, right? You know. Groom should now face east. Okay. So it appears that he sipped the water facing north. And it appears the Madhuparka is also done facing north, because now it says the groom should now face east. Okay, and so he accepted the asan facing east, but then when he gets the water, then he sits and puts it down and sits to the north, does achman, and then the maruparka is also done. And then naturally, because he's done that, he's going to clean his hands. That's the punar achman. Okay. Here, oh, he does that east now. The groom should now face east. The bride of the father of the bride should face north or west, right? So either he's going to stand to his right facing north, or he's going to stand in front of him facing the groom. The groom, okay. The bride and groom should perform achman and then smear kumkum, gorochana, and chandan on their hands. Okay, so now he's done the achman, because now he's done the maruparka. So now you have to do achman again. So now they both do. So he's already done achman before, but this is for him as a punar achman. But for her now in the ceremony, this is where she's doing achman. Okay. And they smear the kumkum, gorochana, and chandan on their right hands. Like that. Kumkum, we know what that is. That's the treated turmeric. That it I think it's treated with lime and it turns red and it's powdered, so it's very purifying and very auspicious. Like that, gorochana, from what I understand, is when you take cow urine and dry it, like put it in a pan or something, you know, big thing that can dry. And when it dries completely, there'll be a slight yellow powder left. That's gorochana. And then chandan, you know, sandalwood paste on their right hand. So he does on his right, she does on her right. The groom should take the bride's right hand and place it on top of his right hand. So his right hand will be facing up. He with his left hand will take her hand, turn it so then it's there, and it'll be put on top. So it'll be the other way. And a married woman with a son, right? Nowadays, you do the best you can, but in the previous times, married women who had sons were actually a very common thing. But, you know, it's something that has to be worked out. Don't just go and expect there'll be one there. You have to plan beforehand, who is this married woman with a son, right? So this doesn't mean a single mother with a son. This doesn't mean de facto woman, you know, who's lived with a man and now has a son. This means she's actually been married, and she's still married, and she has a son. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. And should bind the two hands with kusa and garlands, right? So you have some kusa that's been, you can braid it, you know, like that, like they'll use for doing the around the waist of the brahmacharis. And garlands. You have a nice, you know, thin, don't make these big fat ones. It's a nice thin garland. You know, some nice flowers. Ideally in India, you know, it's like some bailey or jui or some small jasmine that you can get a nice thin, you know, garland, kind of like a rope. And so the two of them together then is used to go around and tie the hands together. While auspicious sounds, ululations are made by the women. So the group of women, then they all make the ululation while that's going on. So now that's being tied, just like the brahmachari is being tied with these. Like that, now the hands of them are being tied together, and all these things are being done for her purification. So in other words, the wedding ceremony is for her purification. He went through the Upanayanam ceremony, and so he got the benefits of that. She, by the marriage ceremony, gets the same benefit. So in the Vedic system, there is equality, but because there's difference of nature, what is equal, how it goes about is different. Just like you may have, you know, the cow and you have the elephant. And so you want to deal with them equally. That means equally means according to their nature. So therefore, the cow gets their kind of food in the way they get it, the volume they need, and the elephant gets the kind of food they eat in the volume they need. Not that they both get exactly the same food in the same amount. That's for fools. That's for idiots who don't understand what equality means according to the nature of who's there. Like that. So, because otherwise, then if that's it, then baby's drinking milk. Either baby's got to eat chapatis with the sabji, it's got a lot of chili in it, or all the adults have to drink milk. Got to be equal, right? So we see here is that these things are done. So she's going to get all the benefits he got by going through the Upanayanam ceremony, right? By performing the wedding, by going through the wedding ceremony. Right, so it'll have all the same elements that are there in the ceremony for the boy, but it's in a unique way that matches now the marriage, because he's on his own and it's about him assisting the teacher. Now in the marriage, it's about husband and wife being together, and so then that should be seen in that context. Right, the father of the bride, so now their hands are tied together and all that, so now between the two they're sitting facing each other or like that, and so then below, or you can be done standing, whatever is going to work for the situation, but sitting is nice. Generally you have these nice, in tradition, these nice copper, they're not plates, they're not bowls, they're a cross, but they're a plate that has very high sides. Like that, generally done in copper, and the sides are special how they're curved, so that the splashed water can't get out. It means it'll hit the edge, like the Visarjaniya Patra. It's the same kind of thing. So that's you put one of those underneath, or some kind of nice bowl, or something like that, or a nice mixing bowl, something that looks nice and is clean, and doesn't look too. Don't use a plastic bowl. So no, you have to say cool whip containers, stuff like that. Okay. And so that will be when he's going to pour the water, then it'll go over the hands. It has to go somewhere. So it goes into this bowl. Nice. If you're not, then he pours it. Then if it has to be done standing, then one of the assistants to the bride, she can be holding, or one of the assistants to the Hotri can be holding. Whatever it is, it's just, you just work it out. The idea is there should be a pot there that catches this water, because you saw is that it's made with what do you call it? The kumkum, gorochan, and chandan. Now that kumkum and gorochan, and possibly even the chandan, because the oil's in it, if that gets on anybody's cloth, you can kiss that cloth goodbye, because that stain will be there permanently. Right? So wedding saris, you don't want stains on them like that. It's not something you do. In fact, those wedding saris are something you wore that once. It could be worn again later, possibly once as some big thing, or it can be given down to the daughter or some other girl of that one has affection for. They can use it at their wedding. So there's something of value that you keep nicely. If it's just a matter of, hey, we don't know anything, it's just a 200 rupee or 500 rupee now, I don't know what they are these days, cotton, Bengali sari. Okay, Hari Bol, wear that, and then it's one of the things you wear, because you only have five saris anyway. Then it doesn't matter. But at the same time, it's just always nice that you don't get anything on it. Therefore, that pot is there. It has to be part of the arrangement. In other words, the bowl that you're going to put underneath, the pot that the father's going to use to pour the water. In other words, ideally it's a pot with a spout, but if not, at least like a lota. And if not, something that pours, that should be kept in the middle of that pot on the side where the chandan is, where the rope is, and it's all kept together. So as we go, as these things come up, there should be a place where all the things are kept, and they should be kept according to the ritual. So whatever was for Madhuparka before this, that the father's going to give, that should all be in one place. Now, this part here, this should be in one place. It can be right next to each other, but it means it has its own place. It's not that, oh, we have to take it. Oh, I know everything. I'm so good. And what happened to Chandan? No. You get that, it's there. You go through this and you see, okay, all these, they're there. Okay, what's the next one? Okay, they're there. The next ritual, they're there. Next, like that. And all this is done well in advance beforehand. Don't leave 2.5 seconds to do this. Start way before. So if the ritual is starting, let's say at 10 o'clock in the morning, you're already doing all these setting up and all that hours before. It's better to be sitting there chanting your rounds with nothing to do and everything set up than to be running around like a madman and then ruining the whole thing. Because if it is like that, even though the girl may be late, you're going to get the blame. That. Okay. The father of the bride should take a pot of water mixed with gandha, flowers, tulsi, and fruit, and recite Mangalacharan. Right, so the fruit means a little cut of fruit, something nice and all that. Don't stick a watermelon inside it. He's got a big bowl and he's pouring the watermelon, falls out, right? You know, just use your brain. And recite Mangalacharan. Again, that same Mangalacharan from before. Like that. The father should give the bride saying, so now they put the hands together, now he's pouring the water. Pouring the water in the Vedic is a contract. Means it follows the determination. In other words, a contract follows a determination. I want to do something, therefore I pour the water, that this will be done. Right? You know, it's just like when that whole thing of Karna, that, how do you say? Arjuna was shooting arrows at Karna, you know, and that, but they all turned into garlands. Because the goddess of charity, because he gave more charity than anybody. You know, at the time, there have been people in the past that have given so much, but at the time, he's the one who's respecting charity the most. So then, this is a problem. So therefore then, we have to do something about this. So then Krishna comes as a Brahmana, disguised as a Brahmana, and came to him and said, you know, because it was noon, and said, you know, this is the time of day for your charity. He says, you know, I'm busy here. He says, oh, but, you know, like that. And so because any Brahmin comes, doesn't matter what he asks, he'll give. So he said, please, since you don't need it anymore, you're fighting on the battlefield and all this, and you're getting so much piety from this, or if you're dying, you're going to go to the heavenly planets, but I'm here. I'm a Brahmin here. Please give me the results of your charity. Right? And so, then Karna agrees, but then he says, but to do that, I have to pour water. I have to, the tarpon, I mean, that has to be there. I mean, not, you know, the pouring of water. And because his chariot got stuck in the mud, his Achman cup spilled. He didn't have any water. So that means in their chariot, they're having an Achman cup. Right? Because they need to touch water for doing, like, if you're going to do a Brahmastra, you got to touch water. You can't just, you know, just wing it. So there's no water. And so he's got so many arrows in him. So then the Brahmin says, but your blood is pure. Because he's the son of the sun god. So his blood is pure. He said, so the Brahmin said, but you can pull out an arrow and use that blood. Because your blood is pure. Right. Then Karna then said, then he looked at him and said, who are you? He says, only my mother and Krishna know this. Like that. So you're not my mother. You must be Krishna. But he said, nonetheless, because you've come in charity, he felt very honored. That God came to him to get charity. That means he's the greatest. And so then he offered it. And so because of that, now the charity was gone. Now Arjuna could kill him with the arrows. So the point is that determination goes with pouring of water. That's the Vedic contract. That's how it works. So when the father pours the water, after this, he said, well, I didn't want to give it doesn't matter. You signed the contract. Pouring of the water, that's the contract. It's done. At that point, the girl is given. The father's authority over her, I mean, his response is gone at that moment. Now it goes to the son. It's given. So that's what he's sampradanam. She's given. And so he's going to say now the mantras to go with it, because with it, then there's mantras and stuff like that. There's a vrata, there's a vow, there's a determination. But that pouring of water and saying the mantra, done. Right? Okay? So then, next time, tomorrow, we'll get into what is the, what do you call it? What is the mantra? Okay. ओम हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। जय श्री प्रभु।